Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WAPC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
To life, l'chaim. L'chaim, l'chaim, to life. Here's to the father I've tried to be.
Here's to my pride to be.
Bring l'chaim to life.
8 minutes after the hour of 5. And unfortunately, a double shanda on a guy who's come back and been resurrected to a new life. Who am I talking about here on the Drive Home at 5? I'm talking about Meyer Lansky, a.k.a. Hyman Roth, a.k.a. Sheldon the Schlemiel, no, make that the Schmendrick Silver, who leaves behind a history of political dreck, the likes of which few have done. In this, the most corrupt state of New York, that's saying a lot, in the nation. And earlier today, an appellate division of the federal court system apparently gave new life to Sheldon Silver, who I thought was well on his way to doing 12 years in a camp fed somewhere in the United States. Yeah, they would give him glash kosher meals, the whole nine yards and all the amenities that a camp fed gives you. But he would be doing time for his political crimes committed. And remember, this was a big notch on the belt of then U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara as he bagged and tagged not only the most powerful Democrat in all of Albany, Sheldon Silver, but also Dean the Greek Skelos and his deadbeat no-show job son. Anyway, on the line to discuss it, Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Ken.
Good to be here.
Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so, Ken. How did this scoundrel, this thief, this crook get off the hook?
Well, really, this has to do with a case out in Virginia. After Silver was convicted, but before he went, you know, had time to go to prison, the U.S. Supreme Court had ruled against, they threw out the conviction of the former Virginia governor, Bob McDonnell. Basically, that guy accepted bribes, or actually, I guess he didn't. They said he took watches and clothes for his wife and trips in exchange for setting up meetings from a donor and official meetings. And they said, well, that wasn't bribery because he didn't take an official action. Anybody could get a meeting with the government, any citizen, so that's not bribery. Really narrowed the law. So now on appeal for Silver, what they said was that because the rules have changed in the middle of the game, the judge, when he instructed the jury in the Silver case, didn't properly charge them. He didn't give them the right directions to consider whether to convict or not. So they tossed it on that. It's more of a technical reason. It was in no way saying he didn't do the crimes. It was just saying that the jury wasn't told how to do it correctly, because the rules changed after the conviction.
You mentioned the United States Supreme Court decision on that case involving the former corrupt governor of Virginia. And what stunned me about that decision, it was across the board. Liberals and conservatives agreed. There was no division in the Supreme Court decision that accepting gifts, gratuities, bribes, as long as you in your official capacity didn't do anything to enable that person, was A-OK. I mean, both conservatives and liberals agreed that's not corruption. I don't know what neighborhoods they grew up in, but where I grew up, that is, you are corrupt right down to the marrow of your bone.
Well, and the question is, what does it take to get a bribery conviction? And nobody really knows right now. And so the U.S. Attorney's Office, this is, you know, for Silver, it's hard to say he's exonerated because, like I said, it's more of a technical reason, and I think his reputation is shot. He'll never do that. You know, he'll never be in office again. And when people think of him, this is what they're going to think of: corruption. However, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office, said today they will retry the case. For Preet Bharara, he better hope his old employees can pull this off, because if he loses this one, on top of various insider trading cases that could overturn, and now we got to see what happens to Skelos if this gets overturned because of this law, this Supreme Court decision, it could be a huge black eye for the former crusading prosecutor, who many people think wants a career in politics.
Now, Kevin, Ken Lovett, take us back to what the defense for Sheldon Silver was. Because if I remember, his defense was everybody does it, everybody does referrals. What specifically at the time was the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, Preet Bharara, charging Sheldon Silver with?
Basically, what they said was that he steered Grant as the Assembly Speaker to a guy. Medical research grant, to someone who then steered clients to his private law firm. And so, you know, he used this official position to help his the private law firm, Weiss & Luxembourg, that he worked for.
Right. And so, if he were not in that position, right, as the most powerful Democrat in all of Albany, he would not have been able to do that, correct?
Exactly. And I'll tell you, I mean, I know a lot of people, and having covered the case itself, you know, certainly, and this is what is the problem with so much in Albany, you know, having covered the case, you know, I know a lot of people who feel that there was reasonable doubt to acquit Sheldon Silver. However, you know, in Albany, a lot of times it's not what's illegal that's the problem, it's what's legal. You know, when Joe Bruno, the former Senate Majority Leader, during his trial, one thing that came out is when they're talking to the Senate Republicans, their counsel says to them, hey, if you're going to, when you file your financial disclosure forms, can deliver them, because then you can't be charged with mail fraud if there's anything improper. Rather than saying file it correctly and legally, they're saying this is how you get around the mail fraud charges.
All right, so in this case, U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, Kim, says he's going to retry Sheldon Silver on the same counts. Now, let's look ahead to the big clouds hanging over Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II. The Buffalo Billions trial, which is expected to get underway, I believe, in October, featuring nine of his cronies, sycophants and lackeys, and naturally his former leg breaker and wartime consigliere, Joe Pococo. None of these decisions would apply to that case, right? Because we're not talking about elected officials there, are we?
No, I don't think these would necessarily. I mean, it depends what official actions were taken. Actually, it could, because in Pococo's case, in certain cases, they said that he helped set up meetings for people who were giving him favors. And, you know, what the Supreme Court decision found was that you know, setting up a meeting in and of itself is not an official action. You know, the argument is that any citizen can do it. So if, you know, that could be something that would be an issue in this kind of case. But there's other things as well.
I do appreciate that. That's Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, New York's hometown newspaper, giving me agita. The fact that Meyer Lansky, a.k.a. Hyman Roth, a.k.a. Sheldon, the Schlemiel, no make that, the Schmendrick Silver, who leaves behind a history of political dreck, has been revived and will have an opportunity to go to trial again, is a double shanda. But think of it, ladies and gentlemen, with the Buffalo Billions case in the offing in October, where the main person facing charges is the man who knows where all the Cuomo political bones are buried, Joe Pococo. Imagine if he's able to actually skip off on these charges, specifically because he arranged meetings, he accepted gratuities and bribes, and somehow, based on a U.S. Supreme Court decision that I'll never understand, by both liberals and conservatives together, in a 7-0 decision, they determined that if you're a corrupt politician, as long as you took gifts and bribes and gratuities, but didn't use your official position in office to benefit your Medici, there's no problem whatsoever. What is wrong with the United States Supreme Court? Problem is, They're all graduates of Ivy League schools. They have no common sense. They have no street smarts. They know nothing about nothing when it comes to corruption.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
Time 26. Yesterday up on the Hill, the confirmation hearings for the next FBI director to replace Comey was of Christopher Wray, well-known in New Jersey because of his most recent endeavors as part of the huge defense team assembled by Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, to fend off a possible indictment against him for his involvement in the Bridgegate lane closure case. On the line to discuss his testimony is Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record. Thanks for joining us on The Drive Home at 5. Mike?
Sure, Curtis. Happy to talk about this. This is a very important issue.
Well, I want you to hear the cross that was done by Lindsey Graham of Christopher Wray yesterday, and tell me what you think.
Okay. Should Donald Trump Jr. have taken that meeting?
Well, Senator, I'm hearing for the first time your description of it, so I'm not really in a position to speak to it. I gather that Special Counsel
Mueller
would...
Well, let me ask you this. If I got a call from somebody saying the Russian government wants to help Lindsey Graham get reelected, they've got dirt on Lindsey Graham's opponent, should I take that meeting?
Well, Senator, I would think you'd want to consult with some good legal advisors before you did that.
So the answer is, should I call the FBI?
I think it would be wise to let the FBI
know. You're going to be the director of the FBI, pal. So here's what I want you to tell every politician. If you get a call from somebody suggesting that a foreign government wants to help you by disparaging your opponent, tell us all to call the FBI.
To the members of this committee, any threat or effort to interfere with our elections from any nation state or any non-state actor is the kind of thing the FBI would want to know.
All right, so I'll take that we should call you, and that's a great answer.
Mike, how do you think he handled that question?
Well, I think he handled it very carefully. But, Curtis, the deeper issue here is that isn't it incredible that we have to remind politicians that, hey, if the Russians call you up and say they want to help you win your election, you ought to call the FBI. I mean, that strikes me as sort of, ought to be basic information that everybody, or basic common sense that everybody in America ought to have. It's incredible to me that we are actually having that sort of conversation is taking place at the hearing for a new FBI director.
Well, then there was Senator Patrick Leahy, who asked him a question that everybody wanted to know.
If the president asks you to do something unlawful or unethical, what do you say?
First, I would try to talk him out of it, and if that failed, I would resign.
So he would first try to talk him out of it.
Stunning. It strikes me that, somebody's got to learn to say no, and you don't do that, and talk him out of it. I mean, just the answer should be no. I don't know. I'm baffled by all of this as it goes on, And you know something, Curtis? One of the things that you mentioned going into this is that Christopher Wray represented Chris Christie. And here is the irony of his whole appointment. It was Christopher Wray who basically hid Chris Christie's cell phone from the FBI, which was investigating Bridgegate. And now Christopher Wray is going to be the head of the FBI. So try to wrap your head around that one and try to make some sense out of that. To me, I can't make any sense of it at all.
Now, were you at all surprised that Bridgegate just didn't surface in those confirmation hearings yesterday, his involvement in that in defending Chris Christie?
Very surprised, Curtis. Let's be honest. Bridgegate is I believe, outside of what we're looking at now with Donald Trump and his little game with the Russians, until that, Bridgegate was one of the most compelling political scandals that we've seen in recent years. I mean, compelling for all kinds of reasons. It was compelling because of the out-and-out bullying tactics that the Christie regime was using, but also compelling for its sheer idiocy. I mean, the idea of causing a traffic jam to punish a small town mayor is stunning to me. And I think the country understood that, and the country got it, and that's why Chris Christie's popularity is now below Jim Florio's. But I was really surprised it wasn't brought up yesterday.
Now, speaking of Bridgegate, yesterday David Wildstein, the cooperating witness, went in for sentencing. He got probation. You think that was fair, and the way the whole process went down?
No, I don't think it was fair, Curtis, and I wrote that in my column. Try to imagine this is a mob case. And the FBI is trying to nail the architect of some mob, criminal activity by the mob. So they want to get the top guy. That would be David Wildstein in this case. Instead, they go to the top guy and get him to flip and become a witness for the prosecution. And who do they nail? They nail two underlings. Bridget Ann Kelly, who's a single mother of four, who's barely holding it together financially, she's facing 18 months in prison. And Bill Baroni, who's also having enormous financial difficulties, he's going to jail for 2 years. David Wildstein is going back to his house in Florida to become a writer. He's writing plays. He's working on a book with former New York Yankees pitcher Fritz Peterson, who, you remember him from the wife-swapping days back in the old Yankee teams in the 1960s?
Oh, yeah, with Mike Kekich. I remember. They swapped wives and dogs.
Yeah. So, I mean, the irony here is stunning to me, and I just think it's a huge example of injustice. And the person who was not nailed here, after there was credible testimony in the trial, and actually credible testimony from David Wildstein, was Chris Christie. And also Bill Stepien, who is now Donald Trump's political director in the White House. Those two characters were not brought on the carpet by the FBI or the federal prosecutors. And I find that to be just wrong.
You know, even though Chris Christie is playing out the string, he's the lame duck governor, would it be nice if he held one more town hall meeting and it would be in Montclair, New Jersey, which he labeled the home of communists?
Oh, well, he can go to Montclair, but Curtis, I think Chris Christie has to come to Fort Lee.
Oh, that's right.
In fact, I do hope he comes to Fort Lee and faces the music. But, you know, he won't do that. Curtis, it's over for Christie. He's mailed it in. He's punched his card. He's out the door. He's faking it on these last few months here. Nothing of any consequence is going to get done in New Jersey. And we have huge problems here with infrastructure and all kinds of things. But he should resign now, I think, and just turn it over to his lieutenant governor. He's just mailing it, and he's very arrogant about it, as we can see with this whole beach blanket Dumbo party that he held down there during the July 4th holiday.
But you nailed it. You called him a fugazi. That's exactly what Shamu El Jefe Chris Christie is, the fugazi governor of New Jersey.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
When the two of us need look no more.
God, I hate this song. By that pedophile on a pedestal, Michael Jackson. It was about the movie about rats, Ben. And it could have applied yesterday when comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, not mine, I didn't elect him, decided he would launch another campaign to eradicate rats and mice in the city of New York.
We came to the recognition that simply exterminating rats on a regular basis wasn't enough. It's good. It's been helpful. I don't want to take away from the excellent efforts that really did reduce the population some. But as we really looked at the facts, it became clear that our efforts at extermination over years and decades were basically like bailing out a leaky boat. You know, you would get the water out for a while, and then it would just come back.
So he said he's going to spend $37 million of our hard-earned taxpayer dollars.
This is a $32 million plan. Nothing of this size has ever been attempted in New York City. We project that this will, in the target areas where we're starting, reduce the rat population by 70%.
70%? Anyway, on the line to discuss that, she's my girlfriend, but she's also the director of the Guardian Angel Animal Protection Division. It's Nancy Regula. Nancy, you've dedicated your life to developing cat colonies and bringing in feral cats. Based on your knowledge of this problem, is this new mayoral program going to work?
Good afternoon, Curtis. Thanks for having me on. I would say in this instance, no, because most of what the administration has done, you know, whether it's de Blasio, just in general, the idea of attacking rats, I mean, it needs to be done in a very logical type of approach, and he's really doing it thinking that, oh, well, the most that we can get in a single instance, that's going to be the best. The problem is that even if you take out a good majority of them, like at an instant, if you're able to get rid of a number of them, they're able to procreate within 5 weeks. They have about 7 to 15, you know, rat babies when they procreate. So even if you get rid of a large portion of them, it's still sort of the remaining problem. So, I mean, his ideas aren't really attacking it at any root issue.
Well,
so,
what would the alternative be, Nancy?
Well, okay, I would say, I mean, definitely my suggestion at the alternative is that you start to establish colonies of cats, which are already in effect, and they're not through any program. They're just through people who, over the years, have been feeding cats. They see the cats on the street. They want to take care of them. They start to bring them in to get them spayed and neutered, and then also they get vaccinated. They get, rabies vaccines, things of that nature. And then you have a bunch of, citizens within the area who are, for years on end, taking care of these cats who are living outdoors because they can do so as long as you take care of them okay. So it actually attacks, like, both issues. It attacks the fact that there's an overpopulation of rats, which quickly does dissipate as soon as you have any amount of cats within an area. But then it also attacks the issue of the amount of money that's going into the shelter system, because, again, that is where the city shelter system is taking in all of the cats, and it's taking in anyone who wants to bring in an animal. But they're going to constantly be in that position of having to take in cats if they never actually proactively go out there and do anything to solve the population issue.
Now, explain what's happening at the Jacob Javits Center, which had an extraordinary rodent problem there.
Okay, well, what the Jacob Javits Center did was they brought on-site a managed colony, which was they took in four feral cats, cats who were existing within a colony environment who had been displaced. And that happens oftentimes when, like, things like construction or something happens. The colony was displaced. These are cats that would not be capable of being adopted into a home environment only because, you know, they're just so used to being outdoors. They're friendly enough. They're healthy. They're fine. They're just not, you know, the type of cats that are going to, like, jump up on your lap or something. They brought them into the Jacob Javits Center just for, and since that time, there have been no rats and no rodents.
Now, if anybody wanted any further information on your Guardian Angel Animal Protection Program, how could they get it?
You can go to guardianangels.org, or you can email animalprotection@guardianangels.org.
Do appreciate that. That's Nancy Regula. She's the director of our animal protection group that manages cat colonies throughout the city that keep the rodent and the rat population at bay.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
Oh, it's been such an ordeal. The program news director here, Noam Layden, who can also hear every Monday through Friday when he jumpstarts your day from 5 to 6 before the start of the Imus in the Morning program, said he had to do such heavy lifting in this special series of reports that he's brought to the airwaves about hookers from hell. That's right, women that will take you around the world in 80 seconds without you even realizing it. Noam Layden obviously had to do some heavy research on this, maybe even some personal involvement. But he's shown us not only the dark side of that life, but how people evolve out of that and actually make money and are able to bank it so that they can lead a life that can bring them fame, fortune, and finance.
It's a 77 WABC News special report. Legalizing prostitution.
In part two of legalizing prostitution, famed Nevada brothel owner Dennis Hoff made the argument for making sex for money legal here in New York.
Prostitution industry in America is about an $18 billion business, and none of that money goes to pay taxes. With my plan, you'll be picking up another $6 billion in federal income tax from the girls.
In part three today, we hear from an ex-call girl who says making prostitution legal will only help the economy, not the men and women who feel trapped by the business. Former escort Annie says the money was the only reason she slept with strange men.
Once you make that money, it is so completely addictive. It is so over-the-top crazy. I mean, it's you want the designer this and designer that. How do you get the American dream? You're supposed to go to college, right? You're supposed to, like, work hard. I saw the shortcut, and I was like, screw this.
But Annie says the danger was always there, even in a place like Nevada, where it is legal. She says reducing sex to a financial transaction undermines normal relationships, marriage, family. And many times she felt like the job amounted to bought rape. And she says it was always, always dangerous.
I was always in life-threatening situations. Are you kidding me? Yes. I've had clients that were in suites of hotels that were $10,000 suites a night rape me with a gun to my head. Yeah. Try to throw me out the window. And I think that a lot of girls don't realize when they get into this, you know, until they have their first rape, their first slap, their first attempted murder from a client, that they do realize the dangers of it. I've been choked by clients that, you know, they choked me to the point where I've been asphyxiated, where I didn't wake up for minutes or maybe a half an hour after they choked me. And I've woken up and they're gone. They've checked out of their room. They're gone and there's no proof.
The argument for legalizing prostitution here, it'll make the whole business safer for johns and hookers. It'll eliminate violent extortionist pimps, create cleaner, safer work environments, impose mandatory condom laws and STD screenings of registered prostitutes by the Department of Health. In fact, in Nevada, where prostitution is legal in 9 of 17 counties, there has not been a reported case of HIV since the screening began back in 1982. And while some lawmakers would love to have the money to pay for underfunded programs here in the city, not one would go on record to support the idea. They say doing so would end their political careers. So for now, the industry stays underground here in New York City, where it's both fierce and really dangerous. Noam Layden, 77 WABC News.
Oh, I see. As part of this last expose into Hookers from Hell, Noam Layden got an in-person interview there. Wasn't over the phone. Inquiring minds want to know how he got out to the chicken shack there in Pahrump, Nevada. Isn't that where the crazy one used to broadcast from? Art Bell, the Looney Kazooney from Parts Unknown, who used to do overnights and dominate the radio airwaves from 12 midnight on. That is correct. But, you know, I can imagine it in the future. If prostitution does become legal here in New York State, the commissioner could be Elliot Spitzer with his knee socks. Remember the hooker from hell that he transported across state lines at great expense? Ashley Dupree, who I think has a dress shop down on the Jersey Shore in Red Bank, New Jersey. Remember Ashley Dupree? In fact, Elliot Spitzer at the time, governor of the state of New York, was going to get hit with a Mann Act charge by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District until he decided to exit stage left and leave the governorship, which paved the way for then-Lieutenant Governor David Patterson to say, "What me worry? You mean I'm the governor of the state of New York now?" Look, crazier things have happened before, but it is a potential. Because just as we are decriminalizing marijuana all across the country, and it's being used now legally in some states for recreational use, I can easily see where prostitution in our children's generation will be legal. The girls, guys, and the she-males and male she's will be fully tested, and you'll have a commissioner as part of a state agency that oversees the legal form of prostitution.